नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय क्रीडस्य अमोघा
संकल्पा
पूर्णनाभिर्यथोनुते तथा तद् विषयं देहि मनीषं मयि माधव क्रीडस्य मोघसंकल्प पूर्णनाभियथोर्नुते तथा तद्विषयां देहि मनीषां मयि माधवम् क्रीडस्य मोघसंकल्प पूर्णनाभियथोर्नुते तथा तद्विषयं देहि मनीषं मयि माधव क्रीडस्य मोघसंकल्प पूर्णनाभियथोर्नुते तद्विषयं देहि मनीषं मयि माधव क्रीडसि एज़ यू प्ले अमोघा इन्फैलिबल संकल्पा डिटर्मिनेशन पूर्णनाभि the spidey, the spider. Yata, as much as. Urnute, covers. Tata, so and so. Tat vishayam, in the subject of all those. Dehi, do let me know. Manisham, philosophically. Mayi, unto me. Madhava, O master of all energies. Translation. O master of all energies, please tell me philosophically all about them. You play like a spider that covers itself by its own energy, and your determination is infallible. Purport. By the inconceivable energy of the Lord, every creative element has its own potencies, known as the potency of the element, potency of knowledge, and potency of different actions and reactions. By a combination of such potential energies of the Lord, there is the manifestation of creation, maintenance, and annihilation in due course of time, and by different agents like Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara. Brahma creates, Vishnu maintains, and Shiva destroys. But all such agents and creative energies are emanations from the Lord. And as such, there is nothing except the Lord, nor the one supreme source of different diversities. The exact example is the spider and the spider's web. The web is created by the spider, and it is maintained by the spider, and as soon as the spider likes, the whole thing is wound up within the spider. The spider is covered within the web. If an insignificant spider is so powerful as to act according to its own will, why can't the Supreme Being act by His supreme will in the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the cosmic manifestation? By the grace of the Lord, a devotee like Brahma, or one in his chain of disciplic succession, can understand the Almighty Personality of Godhead, eternally engaged in his transcendental pastimes in the region of different energies. (Clears throat) So Brahma here is then asking Krishna that you please reveal to me this whole himself and how the whole material world works. Brahma is pious, but the passion is there, so he's the incarnation of the mode of passion. So the desire to create will be there in him. And to create, you need knowledge. So therefore we see the thing manisham, that it's philosophically described. Because the philosophy then gives us that connection, so we understand the connection between what we do and what we means the ultimate where we're trying to get to. So this knowledge then is very important, because if we don't know who we are, where we're going, then our endeavor will not be perfect. And since Brahma, it's his endeavor that he wants to perfect because of creation, therefore he wants to know what is happening. So this is the chit potency. Chit potency means knowledge with action. Now one may doubt, because it's the idea is there that ignorance is bliss. What I don't know then makes me happy. Because if there's some knowledge, then the loss of interest is there, because the mystique is gone. As soon as we know, then it's oh. But actually we see that on one sense there is its original form in the spiritual world within the pastimes, where it seemingly is unknown. Radha and Krishna meet, and every time they meet it's as if they've never met before. It's new, it's fresh, because they're ever expanding, they're unlimited. So the manifestations of their qualities is something newer and newer from each moment. So when they haven't been with each other for some time, then what is expanded in that time then is amazing to both of them. They are, you know, because they know, I mean, they're so perceptive, therefore whatever is newly manifest is something very special. So that aspect is there, that Navayovana. That's the thing, is that ever freshness. In the material world, once it's known, it's done. You know, once it's been said, it's been said. But spiritual world, you know, has it in its perfection. So because of that weakness in the material world, the tendency is I don't want to know, because if I know how I will deal with it, with enthusiasm. Because actually it's due to ignorance. It means the sambandha in the material world means I am ignorant of my position. I am servant of God. God is in charge, I'm a servant. So because I'm thinking I am God and I am the controller and enjoyer, so it's based on ignorance. So any material connection, even if it's Krishna conscious, the tendency is to avoid knowledge, because then the mundane inspiration is lost. Does this make sense? Because then it takes it out of the mundane. It's not mundane. It's when we know I am servant of Krishna, and everything here is Krishna's, and whatever I am engaging in, the potency is Krishna, then it takes all the fun out of it, the mundane fun. So that element is generally avoided. That's why you see, even though Prabhupada tried very hard to establish education in the society and study of his books, it still is not that popular, right? I mean, think about it. Many of you here are here for educational purposes, but think about everywhere else. How much interest is there? Right? Means we have to get work done, we have service to do, but there is time. And Prabhupada wanted us to make time. Because of this focus, the result is better. Just like you could say, okay, I used to watch one god brother. His father was a chef, and so he just grew up in the kitchen. So every day he would cook for himself and whoever happened to be around. He would walk into the kitchen. He put the rice, wash the rice, put it on the fire. In the meantime, cut his vegetables, spinach, put some milk on. And in the time it would take to cook the rice, he had two vegetables and a soup made. I mean, I saw it myself. 20 minutes. Guaranteed. And it didn't matter what they're, himself, four or five people, he'd do it. So then it's not actually amount of time, it's amount of focus. Because focus gives results. So it was seen in one of our temples, who was not an out-of-the-way temple in its day, may still be. It was like the main temple for book distribution in the movement. They would go out 8 hours every day to distribute books. And one day the leader of the zone understood no one read the books, and Prabhupada kind of liked that idea. So then he said, okay, instead of going out from 10 to 6 every day, you go out from 12 to 6, and from 10 to 6 you read the books. They did that. Two results came. One, they knew the books more. Two, Sankirtan was more. In 6 hours, they did more because their focus on Krishna consciousness was greater than in 8 hours where they were just doing it because that's what you do. Now they did it because these books were so nice, they wanted others to have them. Does it make sense? So that there's no time is not actually an excuse. We could say, I'm not that expert, I'm not very organized, I have other priorities. Yes, that we could do. But then again, the same problem that we were discussing in the beginning of the class, then that's knowledge. Then we're acknowledging our position, our weakness. Our false ego can't function in its ignorance. And it takes all the fun out of it. But we see the Vedic principle is the opposite. The more you know, the more you can absorb yourself and get a good result from the activity. It's a little or practically unknown fact. On the side, people try to get to know. You want to know somebody. You want to meet somebody, have a relationship, you try to get to know as much as you can about them. But at the same time, as you have that enthusiasm to know for your purpose of gaining. But once you've gained, generally no one wants to know anything, because knowledge is also in the same position as security. And there's the if it's thought that knowledge will gain security, it's wanted. It means I want that relationship, so to make it more solid or more attainable, I get more knowledge so I know how to deal. Right? So knowledge is for activity. But once I have it, then I may not want to know anything more, because then that might risk its security of having it. Does this make sense? I'm just explaining psychologically why we try to avoid knowledge. But from the Vedic perspective, when you know, then you know actually what is the field. What are your options? Because otherwise the mind is very clever. The mind, it works on the principle that there are unlimited options. Of course, unless one's in a depressed state, then there's no options. But it's unlimited options. And if you actually study it, you know, do the exercise of, okay, what are the unlimited options about this thing that I'm very confused? Sit down and write it down. And you'll find, actually, there's only probably one option. Or maybe two, but the mind looks at each option from so many different perspectives
that you think there's 10, 12 options when there's not. It's very clever, the mind, in this way, because it keeps the bile moving, keeps the emotions happening. That's its business. That's what it does. But when you bring in the intelligence, then you actually find out, well, there's only two options. And then of these two, you do this, like this, that, like that. So actually, this one's the better one. Right? So it makes it easier to work. So in that clear kind of like perspective or clear focus, then one can see very nicely what to do. And then with great focus and attention, you can do it. That means the result will be more. Right? Result will be more. But we have to... It means this is, has to be practically applied. We don't apply it. We know the strengths and weaknesses of something. We don't want to be involved with it. But that's exactly what you should know. Right? If you want to deal with something, unless you know what is the limit of something and what actually makes it work better, how are you going to get the most efficiency out of it? Does that make sense? So that's why the Vedic culture is so much going on this knowledge and, how you say, relationships. Because then you know what is the, who you are, who's the other person, what's the relationship. Then you know what are your options to act. Then with full determination, you can act. Does that make sense? It's easy. It's just like, which would be more comfortable? You come up to somebody, you meet somebody, there's no set way to say hello. So, but you want to make contact, so what do you do? Or, you have a set way of saying hello, and then within that there's a few options. Right? Does that make sense? You know what to do. Or you can say Hari Bol Prabhu, and then offer your obeisances, or offer your obeisances, then say Hari Bol Prabhu. You could fold your hands, you could give them a half hug, you could give them a full hug. But it's within what's there at the moment, and you know what to do. But if there wasn't something, then what do you do? Shake hands, rub noses. You know, what do you do? So that's the point. If we actually look at it, when there's knowledge, and therefore from that knowledge we have our options, we know what the field is. We can operate the field. So that's the point here. By inconceivable potency, every creative element has its own potency. It's known as the potency of the element, potency of knowledge, and potency of different actions or reactions. So each element has a potency. If you don't know it, how do you know how to deal with it? Does that make sense? What is your options if you don't know what the element can do? Then, then that gives you your potency of the element and the knowledge, potency of different actions and reactions. For you have an element, then how it's dealt with will give a reaction. Right? So you get your whole thing. Your field is your elements. Your knowledge and action is the activity. And the reaction is your result. Right? Does that make sense? So this way, that sambandha abhide prayojan is fully entered into. But you have to have knowledge of that. That starts with knowledge of the element. Right? Because you can't understand a reaction or an action unless you know what you're dealing with. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you just kind of put it together and, you know, like that, and then it comes out and it's really nice. Oh, what is it? It's nice. No, but we're talking about what? Oh, we're talking about, some vegetables. Yeah, well, you said put them together, but how you put them together? You put them together in a basket, you put them together in a blender, you know, you put them together under the elephant's foot. I mean, where are they together? Right? You know, oh no, in the pot, like that. Oh, so they're in the pot, but I mean, are they in the pot together just as they are whole, right? I had one guy brother used to cook like that. Everything went into the pot hole. You boil it, and then you'd end up there sitting on your plate, a nice whole green papaya with the skin on it, everything like that. That was lunch, right? And, you know, that gives you more options, you know, what you could do with it, right? Rather than just a set straight thing that somebody hands to you with, you know, there's no endeavor on you. This way, your own imagination. So the more you know, it says, okay, we're going to cook vegetables and we want to cook it like this. You know, like Indian cooking, or we want to fry it. Then it's very clear. Okay, then we just do all these things. Then it goes very nicely. But if it's not clear, does it make sense? Are we being too oblique here? Like that. Okay. Because you'll find this happens every day in your life. Probably the worst one in this is male-female relationships. Nobody wants to know. And if they know, then they immediately think that they're great sannyasis or renunciates or pure devotees. Right? Does that make sense? So then everybody avoids that. And then because they avoid that, then they avoid relationships and things that work. Does that make sense? But because that relationship contains all the others, then everything else can come down from there. So it applies to any relationship you have anywhere. You don't have knowledge about it, it doesn't work. Like that. So here then, these potencies are all Krishna. That's the best part about it. One can think, well, this is very technical, or this is very nice jnana, but we're devotees. Best part about it, all those three are Krishna. The elements are Krishna. Potencies of the elements are Krishna. The knowledge is Krishna, the action is Krishna, the result is Krishna. And he is there in that web, but he's separate from it. That's his position. He's entered into everything in the material world. He makes everything in the material world function. It's anything that works, it's him. So then, understanding that, then Brahma can create. Right? Because then he actually is seeing Krishna in everything. Whatever's going on, he can see Krishna. Because he sees Krishna's potencies as all the elements that are there. Krishna's potencies in the knowledge of that. Krishna's potencies in the action and the reaction that that gains. So whatever's happening in the universe is there. And then, why does he do that? And that Prabhupada's mentioned here. Krishna's pointing out that to have realization of Krishna and his abode, that's the perfection of all tapasya. Right? So Brahma's tapasya is to create. To create according to the Lord's direction. And so that means generating the potency through penance, then through the penance of knowledge and application staying within that, then he'll get that result of creation. And because he's done all that for Krishna, in relationship to Krishna, he will realize Krishna, and he will, as we see in Brahma Samhita, he saw the Dham, he saw Krishna. And that's what's special, the Brahma Samhita. It's being spoken by Brahma when he's actually come to that platform. And Krishna says that's the best. Like that. Any questions on this or comments? Yes.
When he says that each element has a potency, you're saying this potency is Krishna. Just correct me if I'm wrong, but recently more and more this comes to me. Like the Lord Krishna is giving Brahma the option or the ability to create, and the elements are obeying the dictates of Brahma. Like the elements have the ability to obey, this means to have some level of consciousness, even though we call it matter. But actually, because Kamala Krishna has a potency on it, the elements obey, the same way that the great chaplet chants a mantra and makes the elements obey to come together to create some kind of manifestation, or the yogi by makes the elements obey to him to live more smaller or bigger or prakatam, etc. So it is some level of consciousness and the elements.
Is there some level of consciousness in the elements? Because then they function.
The elements are dead matter, but because they've been empowered with Krishna's potencies, what's obeying is the potency. Dead matter is dead matter. Like that. Does that make sense? So, because Krishna's entered it, it will function in a particular way. Right? There's options, but it's just the way Krishna created it, due to his own pleasure. And so, then, that's why he likes us to follow the dictates, because that's how he wants to play. Right? It's his pastime, so that means it's something where he plays, he has fun. So even the material creation is his pastime, so he sets the rules how he wants to play the game. And he enters into everything, and so it functions the way, according to the rules of the game. Now the question is, Krishna is who he is, all the elements are functioning properly. Now the question comes, is just us as another player in the game, do we want to be conscious, do we want to make the conscious effort of properly, playing Krishna's game, and therefore develop a personal relationship with Krishna on his terms? Or do we want to ourselves simply be controlled by those same potencies, so Krishna plays the game with us, just like the cat plays the game with the mouse? You know, the mouse is thinking how to get away, and so then the cat will play and now and again let it go so it thinks it can get away, then catch it again, then let it go, then catch it. Or do we want that we try to interact with Krishna on his terms rather than our terms, right? But he's playing game with us. See, this is an important, very important element. Is Krishna, he is the field. And there's a result he wants to get. But that endeavor in the field and the experience of that endeavor is what's fun. Right? So now the living entity can take part in that. Right? By dealing in a positive way according to how Krishna likes. Otherwise, then what will happen is it will happen, but it won't be a high-grade game. Because Krishna plays the game on all levels. His back is Adharma. And when he expands into Shiva, Sada Shiva, that's the nice side. Once it gets down into Kalabhairava and down past Kali, it gets grungy. And these are the main ones. I'm talking about the Dasa Mahavidya are the main ones we can target. You know, naked lady, breasts hanging down to her waist, running around with her own head cut off, with the blood spurting out, with her friends drinking it. And she's having a great time. And this is the main one. Then it goes downhill from there. Right? There's one called, you know, one of my, it amuses me the most because it reminds me perfectly of the hippies. It's a form called Matangi. Matangi. That's not to be mixed up with the demigoddess Matangi, who is very expert at music and stuff. But Matangi is one form. Her specialty is eating leftovers and having sex with strangers. Like that. You know, it's like the 1960s, you know, archetypical hippie girl. You know, like that. I even saw it once in a hospital. We were there and this top doctor with the number two top doctor was a lady. But she had this nutty side that when she go in there and they take the plates away from the patients, because they're on the side, if there was something interesting that she liked, she'd just pick it up and eat it. And the doctor kind of turned to me and says, "Hey, it's the way she does this all the time." So it gets wild. So that means there's nothing, what's going on, the grungiest, nastiest things, they're all still Krishna's potencies. This is dead matter. But the living entity desires that, so Krishna says, okay, you can play with me in this part of the pastime. But the point is because we think that that is the dead matter, and we're controlling it, we don't actually get Krishna. Krishna interacts with us. He's not about to lose us. He has affection for us, so he arranges it. He's always with us and always interacting with us, but we just don't respond in a direct, positive way. But what's being given to us is understanding these same facts and engaging, starting at the same place where you're engaged in now. But with knowledge, you understand that that's all Krishna. And it's not the material elements. It's not my husband. It's not my wife. It's not my money. It's not my position. It's not my, you know, cool looks or, you know, what is it? Cool be, hit be. You know? You know what I'm saying? It's actually Krishna. It's a game. But the thing is you have to be very careful in this point, because this point that I'm mentioning right now is extremely sharp. And it'll either cut through Maya or cut through you. You'll either, with this knowledge, get out of Maya or really go into Maya. That's why it's talked about constantly, but the elements aren't put together so you can see them working. Because if you ever think, oh, it's Krishna, I can just do it, that's it, you're finished. It's a matter of it's Krishna, that's why I'm attracted to it. But it's a lower form and it's not actually that pleasing to Krishna. But Krishna is unlimited, therefore all these parts are there as part of his personality. But the parts that he really likes are the ones that are interacting based on devotion. The other thing is that they're just happening, they're on the side. You know, it's just like the man has, you know, a big office and factory and all that. The cleaning of the office and, you know, taking the gum off the bottom of the, you know, desks and all that goes on. Toilets are cleaned and you know, like that, and freshened. But that's not where his mind, but it goes on. It's part of him. But what he's thinking about is the relationships and the generation of economics and all those things. That's what interests him. So those who deal with him on that level, those guys are the big guys in the company. Or in his family or friends. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of it's there, but it's seen as Krishna. And so then we start to see that actually, no, I have to, actually, my conscience has to change. So my attraction to that is actually its attraction to Krishna. But that attraction to Krishna in that form isn't really pleasing to Krishna. It's nice that you interacted. But it's not actually pleasing to him. What's pleasing is that it's direct. It means according to, you know, the devotional line. But the technical is there because in the conditioned state we're not on that platform. So therefore all aspects of karma and jnana, it's technically given how Krishna has entered it, so you can see him there. Then your endeavor in that field gives you Krishna.
It's basically how amazing is Krishna, but not to get
entangled. Yeah, how amazing, but also to appreciate. Amazing is a start. Because amazing is Shanta. So it's amazing, but why is it amazing? Why is it even there in the first place? Because Krishna loves us. Why did he make all this out of affection? He doesn't have to bother. You know, he could stick us all in a little, you know, just a empty, dark field, and all we can all try to, you know, you have creamy bhojan, right? 100,000 miles of worms, and all they do is eat each other. There's nothing else in there to eat.
you know, suddenly, hey, that works, you know, and everybody is eating, sleeping, mating, defending is going on, you know, birth, death, old age, disease. I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the biggest, fattest, ugliest, nastiest worm in this pit. You know, so it's all happening. But, you know, he wants to bring us to his Dham, so this place looks like the Dham. Right? There's trees and stuff over there, not pits of worms. So, therefore it looks like that. There's fruits, there's flowers, there's sky, there's stars, there's, you know, because that's the way his Dham is. That's the way he is. That's what he likes. And so all this is there so that we connect with him, remember him. Is that okay?
Yes. So you said one thing that you know, the elements have to interact with, and that actually is manifested mostly in relationships. So when we know this, we know Dharma, we know that we are not men or women, but that we have to act in a certain role for the relationship to work. We know all these things. So what is the reason that we don't want to do that?
Why is it we don't want it? Because then it's no fun.
But it's much more fun if it works.
That's if you have faith in it. Point is like this. Okay, there's a whole nice list of the good qualities and bad qualities of men and women. And if you really think about that, then it's kind of like, why get involved? So that's nice as long as you don't need to get involved. But if you need to get involved, if you don't get involved, you're going to get involved anyway. So it's like this, you get involved in Krishna consciousness, or you'll sideline Krishna consciousness so you can get involved with those who aren't Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? Because religion must be followed. You have to follow some kind of directives and some kind of regulation and restrictions to create an identity and to create a field that you can work with. You know what I'm saying? And since we haven't generated, I mean, we haven't accepted the spiritual, therefore then we have to do it with the material. But the problem is I've seen it so much, is that when someone figures out what is the problem, immediately then they just want to leave and give it up, rather than, okay, now I know what it is and now I work with it. Because that takes duty, which in the modern perspective is one of the dirtiest, nastiest words you can probably bring up. Like that. And I'm not talking karmis. Like that. I'm talking devotees. And then when you expand duty into varnashram, there's more dirty words. Shudra is a really dirty word. Vaishyas nowadays is kind of okay, because the devotees before, it was Brahman was a good word, like that. Vaishya was really bad. You know, it's kind of like the Japanese are on the bottom of the pile, right? You know, so unless they're farmers, you know. But then it was figured out that, hey, money talks, nobody walks. So who's got money, then that's where it's at. Right? So now it's cool, because now what you do is you combine your Vaishya that has the influence of a Kshatriya. That's cool. And Brahmins aren't practical, so they're sidelined. So this is a lot of dirty talk. But unfortunately, Prabhupada mentions again and again that varnashram is the beginning of human life. And he makes no bones about that. If it's not varnashram, it isn't human life. No ifs, no ands, and no buts. But fortunately, devotional service isn't dependent or exclusive to the human species. Right? There's trees, dogs, so many fish who have gone back to Godhead in the Lord's pastimes. So many tribals. So, therefore, that's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. But it works much easier and smoother for human beings than it does for the others. Right? If the devotion is so much it crosses beyond, great. But if the conditioning gets in the way, tribalism does create a lot of social difficulties. So now it's a matter of accepting that and then looking at it so that it doesn't become prominent. Because Prabhupada first will say, without Varnashram, it's not human life. You see, any serious discussion on Varnashram, he starts off with that in the first sentence. But he'll then spend two paragraphs keeping us from becoming smartas. Because Varnashram is human life, but human life is meant to be Krishna conscious. So simply, it's a form that is very comfortable for humans to interact in. It means there's nice definitions of who's who and who does what. Otherwise, social disarray happens when people will not accept who they are and what is their facilities and what are their limitations. No one wants their limitations. Right? You know what I'm saying? The person themselves has nothing to do with it, takes no responsibility, but they want full right to yell and scream and say anything about anybody on any topic. And that people should take it seriously and someone else should get it done. Right? That's cheating. Even animals are better than that. You know a dog's, you know, you bother him, he's going to go for your throat. You know? So you know what to do, but these people, they're worse than animals. Worse. Like that. There's no leader in the world, past, present, or future. There's no book on leadership. There's no book on management would ever agree with that. No social study, no nothing will agree with that. But it sounds somehow or another very nice to the unintelligent. Maybe sophisticated intelligent, but unintelligent. So then, because knowledge then means I have to only do what I'm supposed to do. I make my money by working for somebody. And I'm comfortable with that because it means every week I get my check so I can plan my budgets, I can plan what I do with my life. It's comfortable. Great. So then why not acknowledge that I maintain myself through the occupation of a shudra. Therefore, I have my rights, means people should consider me as a person, and facilities should be given based on that emotional closeness. And at the same time, is that generates there must be loyalty. I must try to figure out who I'm working for and what is exactly they want to get it done and try my best to help them, because if they're prosperous, I'm prosperous. Right? I get money because he makes money. If he doesn't make money, I don't get money. So if I help him make money the way he wants to make money, I get more money. It's just practical. And something in my area, okay, I work on this machine, so I found that working with this machine in this way, there's some problems. So if you adjusted it, you'd actually get more efficiency. That's my right. But telling them how to manage on upper levels than that or other things is not my business. That's the business of a Vaishya or a Kshatriya or Brahmin, whoever you're working with. It's not my business at all. I'm a Shudra. The Brahmin, he knows how the system works. He studies it. That's what he does. Right? You know, it's just like, what was it? Someone was saying, you know, they were talking about nuns. It's all right for them to be, you know, detached. That's what they do for a living. You know? Like that. So, that's what they do. And they can tell anyone in the system that knowledge. And they have the right to be respected for it. But at the same time, that's where it stops. Is its advice. Bus. We see here, here's God. He's simply advising. He's wishing Brahma luck. What does that mean? It means you got to do it. The result is yours. The action is yours. The result is yours. He's wishing him luck. He doesn't say, yes, now you've surrendered, I take care of everything, and the big home sign there with the bright light in the hand, and all auspiciousness, and then out come the talking lions and tigers, and you know, all the nice little things. Right? Does that make sense? It's you got to do it yourself. Therefore, the Brahmin tells others what is there. This is what Shastra says. This is my understanding of it. This is how I can see are the best elements of time, place, and some circumstance to apply it. But it's up to you to do it. And what Brahminical council in any of our temples is functioning like that? No, they think they are the ones running the temple. That's not Brahmins. That's managers. So all it is they want to see, we're Brahmins, so we're not responsible, but we want the control of the Kshatriyas. That's cheating. That's not human. That's why there's trouble. That's why it doesn't work. Human life works. Tribal life does not work. If it did, why the West isn't like so perfect? Why do we read in the Vedic how Nicaea works? It's trouble still, it's a material world. Right? But still you know it, you know, at Krishna and Arjuna's time, and Duryodhana, he's a big demon, but you still know that wearing a dhoti and tilak is fine and all that, and you know, if you wore jeans, even Duryodhana would think you're weird, and he's a big demon. Ravana would think you're weird, Aranyakashipu would think you're weird. You know? You know what I'm saying? So it's comfortable. It's where human life is experienced. It's where human emotions are experienced. Tribals are for sub-animals. Even animals get better experience than the tribals. Unless the tribals in their natural state. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so we'll end here, and then we'll continue after if anybody has any further questions. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda Ki, Jainitai Gaura Premana Ki.
Somehow.
Nottingham Forest. Very good, thank you. Yeah, how is it going? Okay. Yeah. That you're still there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Very good. Very question is because everything comes out of Krishna, goes back to Krishna, then since it's part of his body, it enters into his body, that is dissolution, then wouldn't it be conscious? The point is Krishna is conscious of it, but it itself is not conscious, just like we as separated living entities are conscious, but we are not conscious of Krishna. You know, but even then, we can only be limitedly conscious of Krishna. It's for us, it's perfect, but we don't know what he knows, like that. That's why it's technically said that only Radharani is the devotee, and everybody else is her assistant, because whatever is Krishna, then she is that on the transcendental platform.
Does that make sense? So there's a whatever it is of interest or desire of Krishna, then that can be manifest by her. Well, no one else can actually know everything. So just as Krishna knows everything, that knowledge is actually her. Like that. So you do have, just as you have living, you have to have dead. Right? If you have good, you have to have bad. Everything has to be there, otherwise it doesn't work. It's not complete. And then how is it perfect? You know what I'm saying? So that's the idea, is you have night, you have day, then you have twilight. Right? So, because of that, then twilight takes on its own perfection. You know? So you have right wing, you have left wing, then you have what's in the middle. So you have everything. You have older, you have younger, then you have what's in the middle. So it's always like that. So that middle path is actually where the two meet. So that's where that's the best place. So it's not a problem that there's such a thing as matter that's dead. It's not a problem. But its manifestation is how you say, homogeneous. So it's only with Krishna's glancing over it that it separates into the actual elements as we know it, the 24 elements. Then Brahma takes those elements with that knowledge of how those elements actually interact with each other, then he can create everything, because whatever is created is still acting according to the natural nature of those 24. It's not outside of that. That's why there's a consistency in everything. Means if you understand one thing in one part of the creation or in one subject, technically if you know what you're doing, you can transfer that to any other thing. Just like if you know how electricity works in Europe, you can understand how it works in America. It's not different. You know, the plug may look different, the machine may look different, but it's still the same. Potency doesn't change. So like that, then...
So Maharaj, what you're saying is the living entity is unconscious but can become conscious partially when it becomes Krishna conscious.
Yeah. Means they're conscious, but what I'm saying is they're not conscious. They can't be conscious of everything.
Okay.
Because Krishna is unlimited and the jiva is not.
But the elements, Krishna can be conscious of the elements, but the element will never be conscious of Krishna.
No. It's dead matter. But that dead matter itself is personified as Durga, because it's a shadow. So she is conscious. But it's just the nature of the matter is dead matter.
Because in the spiritual entities, like for example, the Brahman, there is millions and millions of unlimited living entities flying in this Brahman, but they are flying within the space. What is the space?
The space is Brahman. Means they are not the Brahman, they are within the Brahman.
Within the Brahman.
Yeah, because Brahman is Krishna's effulgence.
Exactly.
Brahman is existence. Brahman is existence. Like that.
Would Brahmanda be the counterpart of Brahman, but within the
material? Brahmanda is the Brahman of material elements.
That's the Brahmanda.
Brahmanda is the universe.
So that is the counterpart of Brahman in the
No, it's just more Brahman. Means there's active, conscious, fully, Bhagavan realized Brahman in the Vaikuntha planets. Then you have the Brahman that's just eternity, and then you have the unconscious Brahman of the material world. It's all Brahman.
Is that a word for
Mahatattva? It's Mahatattva. Yeah, Brahmananda is Mahatattva. Mahatattva means the material Brahman that's been impregnated with the living entities, and the material elements are separated.
And where does
Pradhan? Pradhan means material elements that the jivas
false ego and the mind and all the elements are not separated. So it's not active. Once you put the living entities in with their desires and separate things, it's still considered transcendental because there is no mundane activity going on.
The brother, that before Vishnu glances over.
Basically, you could say that.
Before the 24 hours.
The pradhan means before that. Pradhan just means material energy. Yes.
It's possible. I would like to go back to that topic. We touched in the class. So you were saying that there are people who like to talk about subjects and topics and issues, but they don't want to do anything with them. At the same time, you said that there is also a class, the Marinical class, who just give advice, but don't manage.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you distinguish practically
between the two?
Brahmana and one is something else.
What is a Brahmana or not? Well, basically, it may be, you have to see. Because you can have Brahman, you can have Brahmabandhu, and you can have just gossip. Gossip.
Gossip?
Yeah, gossip. I mean, everybody likes to talk about everything, you know? Like that. The main thing is knowledge is there. I mean, so what I'm saying is they want to do things or talk, but they, meaning here is they don't want to. Means you have those who will they'll feel can't get the right word. Means you actively apply theory through the discussion and thought process. You know, we're not able to turn theory, the noun, into the, you know, whatever it is. I guess the
affirmation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would be a form of theory having been transformed back into a verb. It would be a credenta of like that.
No faith in.
Yeah. So then, you have the theory. People like to discuss it. Then you have those who just want to get something done. And for those who are intellectuals, just discussing theory is enough. Those who are pragmatists, they don't generally like theory. So then, but the Vedic is a balance that you have to have both, the theory and the pragmatism. It means the theory must be practically applied, because theory applied is culture. That's the difficulty, is when there's no theory, technically you can't have culture. Right? And if the culture is divorced from the theory, then you just have sentiment. So Prabhupada warns against these two.
Theory is like
ethereal, just vanishing. Theory is ethereal, but actually it's hard science. It's actually where it starts from, because gross manifests from subtle. So if the subtle's not right, the gross doesn't manifest right. So that's the thing. The Brahmins, Kshatriyas, they understand that theory is exceedingly real.
Apply.
Yeah. Vaishya-Shudras tend to avoid that. Sometimes they may appreciate it, sometimes not, but it's not necessarily important to them. The Brahmins and Kshatriyas, without that, they don't function. Kshatriya won't do it unless it's according to the science. Brahman won't do it unless it's according to the science, because it's only from the science you can apply the art and get the result. Otherwise, your application will be faulty and your result will be faulty. Like that. And since they work in more long term, means they work in the long term as the visionaries. And so then, but at the same time, it should be practical. Right? That's the thing, is Brahmins, it should be practical, but sometimes it's not as much, depending upon them. They can also perfect themselves even if it's not practical, because they deal with very minimal material energy. So as long as what little they deal with is fine. But many of them make it practical. But Kshatriyas, it has to be practical. Like that. So they don't like theory that's not connected. So they'll even sometimes argue if the theory hasn't been presented well enough that it's practically applicable. is that they have to have a result because they're result oriented. But it should be based on a theory. You know, there has to be something to it, something there. So they'll see it as a science. So Vaishnavas, when they'll look at it, it's an art. That's why your modern management books, it's Vaishya perspective. They're not written from the government perspective. Or Kshatriya is written from the Vaishya. So they're presenting an art. You know, it's more on the application, the art of how you talk to Mr. Smith to get him to work harder, all these different things. So they know if I say this, this happens, that happens, but it's all detail. That's why a new book has to be written. Otherwise, this concept could be written in a pamphlet. And a smart person can take it and use it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. It means like in Japan, they only have one management book that was written in the 17th century called The Five Rings, which is a book on martial arts, on sword fighting. But they understand that principles on which it is, and they transfer it from martial arts into business. If you're smart, you could partake of that from martial arts into any art or into, you know, anything intellectual. Or it's just because it's, in other words, yeah, same. On the West, unlimited books are going on like that, but they just have one book. And they're not considered bad businessmen. You know, in the world, they're quite respected. In fact, you know, even the Americans and British, much of the time, have to take up their methods to keep up with them. They want to compete, then they have to, many times, do what they do.
But they don't have the element of respect when the Japanese
come
along.
They do.
They don't have the culture.
Yeah.
And that's what works.
Yeah.
So practically, how to determine, especially oneself.
Okay, how to determine?
How you determine if you're just speculating or not?
Okay. Okay. Two things you could look at. One is, what is the philosophy and metaphysics given in the Shastra, or the skills given in the Shastra that you're discussing and contemplating? Right. Is that right there? In other words, where is the Shabda, you know, of what is being discussed? Right? Then another one is, okay, this topic, what does it have to do with you? And what are your rights and restrictions within this topic? Right? Then you can understand where you fit. Does that make any sense? You have management. Okay. Are you a manager? Is that what you do for a living? Do you manage? Is by management, that is how you're able to maintain yourself. If it is, and so therefore, yes, you can make comments on management. But now, is the area that you're commenting on your responsibility or not? If it is, yes, you have the right to comment, and yes, you have the right to expect that others are going to listen to it and do it.
If it's my area of
responsibility. But if it's not my area of responsibility, then it's not my right to expect that others are going to follow it, or even necessarily want to listen to it. I'm a temple president in one temple. They're a temple president in another temple. So I have the right to make comments on temple management. But to another temple president, it's simply just, you know, discussions of what I've done and what's worked for me and what I could see could work in your situation if the other temple president is actually interested to hear. They're not interested. It's not my business to tell them. It's not my responsibility. And if I think it's, I have the mandate to tell them, then that's what starts problems. That's what starts politics. You know? Like that. Because there has to be some reason or something, you know, come in. Or as a friend, you know, or you've been requested to by some other higher authority to do that. There must be some reason. It's not just because I want. That's the problem with crusades. whoever asked, you know, I mean, it's just like you have a bunch of people living there, and so whoever asked some people from, you know, as far north as you can get in Europe to come, you know, riding down there and to harass people in the Middle East. It's just they decided it was their business. But because it wasn't their business, then they were driven back. You know, if you live there, you know, in that place, okay, then you can say, it's okay, we're Christian, this is also our holy place, so you can't restrict us from, you know, also, you know, how you say, taking advantage of this same holy spot, you know. Yeah, like that. It means our man was here 2,000 years ago on the same spot that your man came here 700 years ago. So, you know, at least you could be nice enough to allow us to respect our 2,000-year tradition, but at the same time, we shouldn't get in the way of your 700-year, you know, restriction. And then, of course, you have another group that will say, hey, we've been here 4,000 years, so hey, you know. And then, of course, you have the Palestinians. You know, they'll say, we were here before that. You know? So, you know, so it's, in other words, there must be, you must know where the line, limit is, where the line is. Otherwise, anybody can make up a crusade, anybody can do this and that, and then everybody else is wrong and doesn't understand. And it's kind of like, hey, you know? It's like this, you have somebody who is there, they feel it's their mandate to establish Varnashram. And then they're getting on all the Brahmins' cases that why they're getting into all this theory of Varnashram. Why don't I do something practical, like get down and get their fingers dirty and grow carrots? Right? And then this person is going to be an established Varnashram? They don't know what a Brahmin is, they don't know what a farmer is. In fact, a Brahmin is not supposed to farm. For a Vaishya, for him to do farming and cow protection, that's his first option. In fact, when cows are created, Vaishyas are created to take care of them. So if a Vaishya is going to take care of cows as an occupation, a Brahmin or Kshatriya should never do it as an occupation. They can keep cows for milk for themselves. As an occupation, never. If there's a Vaishya willing to do it. Only if Vaishyas aren't willing to do it, the cows aren't, then they make Vaishya. Brahmin Kshatriyas might do it. No, it's not. For a Brahmin and Kshatriya, rather than farm, it's better that they do business. That's their first option if they're going to take up a Vaishya's duty. So, what does this person know about Varnashram? Have no idea of what they're dealing with. You know, they're saying, why are the Brahmins, you know, intellectualized? That's what they do. I mean, so that's the definition. Prabhupada calls them intellectuals. Hello? He didn't say farmers. He didn't say, you know, how do you say, enlightened farmers. You know, how do you say, Vaishya Rishis. You know, you have the Vaishyas and you have the Vaishya Rishis. You know. No, he didn't say. Huh? Rajarshis, yeah, have that. But. I mean, Vaishyas are someone like Nand Baba, and they're, you know, very elevated. But what I'm saying is that one has to know what is there, and it's not a problem. Problem is there's this whole prestige thing, is that, you know, Shudra's on the bottom of the pile. No, actually, for a Malecha and Yavana, for a Westerner, a Shudra is actually human. Someone who's a follower of the Western culture is not human, technically. Because they're not following Varnashram. So they're not human, they're subhuman. Sophisticated, intelligent, very active, very practical, but subhuman nonetheless. So being a Shudra is a step up from wherever the Westerners came from. It's a step up as a human. So that's the thing. So we have a tendency to take wherever we're from and take that as a standard, and then, you know, Shudra has to be the bottom of the pile. You know, Brahmins are so far this way and Shudras are like so far into the mud you can't even, you know, is it, you know, what is it? I'm going to sound you so low that you're going to have to look up to look down.
They're less intelligent. They are saying less intelligence. They're intelligent, but they're a little bit less intelligent than the others. When they're less intelligent, they're not saying they're fools, they're saying just less.
That's there. You can take it on that, but you also have to take the definition of what's intelligent. Intelligent is the ability to distinguish between matter and spirit and choose spirit. Right? It does not mean how good you are at facts and figures and memorized technique. There are shudras that are so much more materially intelligent than probably your average Brahmin.
Yes.
Like that. You know, I mean, you take someone, let's say, who is a head of state's personal assistant. They make all the arrangements, they give advice on how you should dress or talk to this person or what points they should make. Some of them who have been there for so long, they actually, in one sense, manage. But at the same time, they don't get the credit and they don't have the responsibility. So they may be even more qualified than the next rung down of management. But they're a shudra, they're not a kshatriya. You know what I'm saying? So that's the position. So that's not the consideration, because all these things have their various manifestations. If we'd accept the principle of it, then the detail we can find. You know, just like generally when we, our definition of woman generally means unsophisticated village girl. That's how generally any, you know, macho man worth his salt defines women. But generally most all the women that we ever read about are highly sophisticated, intelligent, qualified city girls. You know, the first nine cantos, these are all city girls. They may go to the forest, but the city girls went to the forest. Right? Who's the villager here? Right? Who's not smart?
No, Krishna, define feminine qualities, intelligence, memory.
Yeah, so that's all, because that's what's there. The masculine is what's the support of that. You know? The masculine is that there's something there to remember. But the remembrance of it, that's feminine. So then it's a matter of distinguishing, okay, what is my responsibility and how do I actually maintain myself? You could probably take those two and that would make it easy to distinguish. You know, as something to work off of. How do I actually maintain myself? What is the essence of it? And what is my responsibility? Then you can decide whether you're in an advisory capacity or it's something where you have a right to get something done. Then you can distinguish, therefore, depending on the field, then where they match in that. You know, if it's a Brahminical field, so is that how they maintain themselves? You know? So if that is, then that's their right. At the same time, you know, in other words, Brahman has a right to say anything to anybody, but at the same time, that's where it stops. And it's the right of the person who's being advised by the Brahman whether they follow it or not. And the Brahman's just got to learn to live with that. That's why the rule is there, don't speak unless the person wants to hear. Because if they don't follow what you want, then it's insulting, and Brahman should avoid anything that's any situations that are insulting. Therefore, better to act like a fool in a general assembly and not say anything than say something to fools. That's why these rules are there. Because if you understand Brahminical mentality, it means because it's right, it is according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, therefore they can't tolerate that someone wouldn't follow it. So therefore don't say it to somebody who's not going to follow it. So you can say anything to anybody, but this is the restriction. And you can only be strong about it if you're responsible for that person. You're not responsible. You have no right to make comments.
Comments.
You can't make comments about, you know, this one's this, that one's that. It's not your right. Comments means I like to make comments about another person, but it's not my right because I'm not responsible. It means the teacher can say whatever they like about the student because they're responsible. you know, husband about the wife, the parents about the child.
The boss about the workers.
Yeah, because he's responsible. But if you're not responsible, you don't have the right to make strong comments. So for me to just make a comment about another devotee, I don't have the right to do that, because if I'm not responsible for them. If I'm the temple president and they're the devotees in the temple, then I can be very strong with them because they're not Krishna conscious. But if someone who's out of the purview of my responsibility behaves in a way that I don't appreciate, then I note that, but it's not my right to say something. I can't go on the email and spread it all over and make comments. It's not my right. It's demoniac to do that.
You're saying about personal comments on somebody specifically? Because, like, for instance, at the beginning, the audience opened the class by saying, by pointing out that education is neglected.
Yes.
And that's a general comment.
Yeah.
You didn't point out that temple, that president of the GBC.
Yeah.
So that comment is okay.
It means general comment is okay if it's appropriate for the situation. It means I'm here as a teacher, and we've been asked to give this class. We didn't demand to do. And people are here voluntarily, basically. And so then what is perceived by the persons, and I'm making these comments for the residents of Mayapur. So observing the community here, then as a sannyasi, I do have the right to make comments on the grihastha ashram and the management, despite whatever they think. Because I am the teacher. But responsibility is only as far as they give. Because it's not, means siksha must be acknowledged. But at the same time, that's why we keep it generic. Because we see that they are endeavoring for spiritual life. At the same time, I see them madly endeavoring for material life.
Given by the Shastra Maharaj. The Brahman is the spiritual master before by the sannyasi Varnanema spiritual master. So you have given by the Shastra already.
Yeah, that's there. But see, he's making the fine point is how far, where's the line? So therefore it comes that it's just advice. They follow it or not, it's up to them.
Sure.
You want to make some? Prahlad, you want to say something? Okay. So, here, 1 second. So the thing is you're trying to find where the line. So that's why we only take it up to that point. And it's, we're speaking on the philosophy as opposed to on this verse and that. And trying to make it, bring it as close to home as possible. But that's where it ends. Because we don't have any technical responsibility in that area, so those who are interested, they listen, and those who are not, don't listen. Does that make any sense? So that, therefore, it must be kept generic and in line with the philosophy, so it's basically a philosophical point. If it goes personal, then there must be some connection there, some reason that it can drop down into that level. Does that make sense?
Could you give examples of one or more examples of what you mean by being also very materially busy?
What materially busy? Look at all the how nicely all the houses are done. You know, fancy houses, nice houses, which is fine. I have no problem with that, and it's great. But then also look at the age of the persons who are doing it. The ones who are building the nice houses are generally at the age of retirement. So that's my point, is why are they building the house? Why is it only now that society is letting them build the house now and not 30 years ago when they should have built that house? Why is it now when their kids are growing up and trying to take up Krishna consciousness, are they trying to keep them at home and create family life? Right? Why is it after a whole lifetime of detachment, are they now, you know, getting married and starting up their families at 50? because the whole culture of Krishna consciousness was not understood. So therefore, when you have knowledge, then you don't deal with it. Right? Knowledge. Women are crazy, material life or family life is bad, this, that, blah. Therefore, I don't deal with it. Until it gets to the point where there's no question that I can't ignore it anymore, so I start dealing with it. And then to do that, I don't deal with it now. It's the same position, but I acknowledge that, okay, I'm 50, I'm getting married again, and I'm starting a whole family and all that. Great. So then, fine. But to do that, I'm not saying that, yeah, that's the way it is, but I got these few things and I'm trying to work them out, and it's specifically in this area because I've been thinking about it for 30 years. So therefore, then here's the point. So, you know, it's this attachment or that attachment or this need and that. And so therefore, we're working to get those nicely engaged in Krishna's service, and then by the process given in Gita of Naishkarmya, then I have confidence that those desires will be burned up. And then I'll be able to come to the standard I've always wanted to be detached from these things, but I wasn't able to do it. Have you ever heard one devotee say that?
Yes.
You have. I have. I haven't heard anybody say that. They say, well, this is what I'm saying, it's the difference. They'll say, I've been doing this and that, attached, so I'm getting married. But then it'll go to, but it's okay. They'll cover it. That's what I'm saying. When they actually go to apply it, they'll cover the knowledge and then go back to the lady's okay, family life's okay, everything's okay.
Not being honest.
That's my point. And then, if they're more aggressive, then they'll even profess it or turn it into a crusade or say that others who don't do this because they don't want to be the only ones in Maya, then they want to make sure everybody's in Maya so they can feel comfortable. That's what we're talking about. So we want to see the local community members avoid that, seeing that they're in the Dham. One day here is worth, you know, 1,000 days anywhere else. So if they could take it up very quickly, they could get through the whole thing, get what they want, and get out. On the West, who knows if they'll ever get through it or get out. Everything works so slow in the West, so slow. Very slow over there.
Spiritual advancement.
Spiritual, material, everything's slow. It's just slow. It looks fast, but it's actually very slow. People understanding things, moving forward things. It's like, okay, we were talking about knowledge. So where in the world is it the regular thing where there's so much knowledge and education going on? Other than here in Vrindavan. There's a Dham, so therefore people living in the Dhams understand the importance of doing it. It's people who live here doing the education, not from outside. They're inviting people from outside. Does that make some sense? And if the people living here weren't into it, it probably wouldn't happen much. You know? So, you know what I'm saying? So, I'm just giving these practical things. I try not to be too specific about it because it gets too disturbing.
Is there anywhere, have you written anything in that area?
That's a question not to ask. No. Unfortunately, we're only able to add to the, how you say, global warming at this point. We're not able to... We're not able to, how you say, push forward the cause of Microsoft or other such companies at this point. Yes.
And in case, like for example, Niti Shastra, when he's making specific comments of every level, every varna, every occupation, he's specifically giving such a nice practical advice of Ramana. So for a writer, maybe he can make comments if he's applying through a particular Shastra.
Yeah. I mean, see, comments are there. One can speak the truth, but one has to see that it doesn't become... It doesn't become personal on the ones you are talking to unless you're responsible for them. And others can be used as an example as long as you don't personally involve them. Right? So we mentioned so many things. means I'm not telling you the temple presidents that I'm talking about. I'm not telling you about my god brothers and god sisters. I'm not telling you about the different zones or the different... So many were there, but these things go on. And we're only bringing it up because otherwise the tendency I've seen is the philosophy's philosophy and my life's something else. I've found it kind of generally rare that devotees connect the philosophy with their day-to-day life. They'll connect philosophy with their life. It means devotees have connected. It means as a philosophy devotees, basically you could say any devotee is well situated in philosophy. Right? They know the philosophy well. Maybe more technical lesson, but they know they're situated very well in that. Then the temple program, their specific devotional activity, their dress or food or behavior in those situations. Generally, you could go anywhere in the world and it's good. You know, some places will be more good, gooder and most good, like that, Yeah, best, good, better, and best, like that. That's there. But what I'm talking about is when you step out of your designated temple service and temple program and sadhana as such, and the lifestyle that devotees live outside of that, that's what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm talking about. And with time, there's more and more of those moments in devotees' life. Previously, those moments were ignored. And, so there's ignorance. We have knowledge, we don't deal with it. And now it's, I want to deal with it, I don't want to hear the knowledge. What I'm saying is, if you don't have both, you're going to suffer either way. You suffer for 30 years being the renounced intellectual, and then you're going to suffer for 30 years being the ignorant karmi. So I'm saying is, unless you combine them, you're not going to get out of here. And then you just go back, forth, back, forth, back, forth. Like that. So why not just, that's the middle path. It's that I have the knowledge, same time I make the endeavor. And that puts us in the middle. So that's my point. So the liberals don't know what they're talking about. The conservatives don't know what they're talking about. The path's in the middle. We have conservative values, but we apply it to time, place, and circumstance and give the freedoms of the liberals. That's broad-minded. So our definition is completely different. So this whole modern thing of modern politics and modern politically correct, we have nothing to do with it. Because they're all wrong. At the same time as they have elements that are right, otherwise why is it working? Right? Why do liberal parties work? Because there are some elements that are very nice.
From the cleverness of the mind, we try to avoid things by number one, probability.
Yeah. So one has to try to find that middle path so it applies and works. Right? That's what we're trying to gain. So Krishna consciousness is something else. That's why Prabhupada, wherever he went, wherever he talked to, everybody liked him. Everyone could relate to him. You don't really hear of any of these conversations where the person went away completely just thinking, what was that, and these guys are crazy and that. No, I can't remember anyone. Maybe there is, but I haven't heard of. Or Prabhupada's actually conversed with somebody, interacted with somebody that they didn't appreciate Prabhupada as a person. And he's people off the street, heads of state, business people, intellectuals, journalists, people on television shows, like that. All these different, everybody liked him. So that's broad-minded. He's able to accommodate everybody because he has a standard from which he starts and then figures out where that other person is and then discusses with them how to get there. He had I think it was Graham Hill. Back in the 60s, he was like the top Formula One racer from England. He met him in England, somehow or another. For 20 minutes, he talked about cars with the guy. He talked about cars. Prabhupada was talking about, when I was young, I had this particular model of car, some English car that was some, classic. And the two of them got talking about cars and this and that, and they were having a great time. Then at some point he says, you're racing, you're going very fast. He says, don't you get, when you're going through those corners and you're going so fast, do you ever get afraid of death? Or in that fear, do you ever think of God or take shelter of God? And as soon as he acknowledged that, bang, then Prabhupada's into the philosophy. But he didn't go, oh, you're a driver, this is mine, this is that. No, it doesn't talk about it. Pingala is a prostitute. Right? She's teaching us how to become detached from the material energy. 11th canto is this technical, metaphysical methods of Naishkarmya, how to get out of here. And one of the teachers is a prostitute. Another is a girl cooking. Right? Another's a python. Like that. So that's our line. Is that we can take this knowledge from anywhere. We can learn. So it's prestige isn't a question. We couldn't care less about prestige. Prestige is necessary for the proper operation of things. If people don't respect the temple president, how do you manage? And manage Krishna society is important. Therefore, one must respect that position. Like that. So, as far as occupational duties go, yes, these different things are there. But as far as personal prestige goes, what does it matter? You know, what does it matter? Like that. I mean, you can't get... I mean, already it's bad enough that we're in the material world. Like that. Then you can take it, okay, bad enough you're in the material world. Okay, but then being born in a family of meat-eaters? Cow-eaters? Can anyone ever stand up? Can anybody who has eaten cows ever stand up and really make a strong case of morality? Right? I mean, of the five great sins, killing Brahmins and cows is, I think, it's the number one. You know, sex with your mother, intoxication, gambling, these are lower than that. So it's bad. And then to make a stand on that we're so moral?
Who does?
Yeah. So I'm saying, who can do that? So, therefore, where's the prestige that devotees could stand on that I have a right to make, you know, these social crusades? You know what I'm saying? So, we have to be very, very careful in this, is that everybody's trying and everybody's trying their best, and so we have to have that forgiveness and have that broad-mindedness that the person is trying their best. Okay, let us take an example here. Okay, the husband didn't call the wife, he was late, and he comes home, and then, have those things that you have the holes in and you poke things, and then after that then you marinate them, and, you know, and all these things. So after, you know, doing this whole nice emotional arrangement like that, the man could think, you know, this lady doesn't like me. You know, or it's wrong, I'm out doing things for her. He could think this. And if you took the externals of justice and right and wrong and all that, you could make a case that yes. You know, just like that you could make a case that Ashwatthama should be killed. But when you go niti, yes, that's correct. You know, where there's justice and morality. But when you go up to the next level of dharma, then it's, well, he is the son of our teacher. He is a Brahmin. Okay, he had a bad day. You know? Like that. So, but otherwise he does act as a Brahmin, everything, so he is a Brahmin, he's to be dealt with as a Brahmin. Not because he performed abominable activities, not a Brahmin, no. It's that he's a Brahmin who did something wrong. He's not, because of that, you're not a Brahmin anymore. That's cheap for those who don't understand culture. They make comments like that. Somebody makes a mistake and, oh, they're not this, and, oh, they're not a devotee, they're not that, and, you know, we can do anything we want. It's just our insistence on being God and being unrestricted that we make those statements. So, therefore, but the thing is why is that being done? It's out of attachment. The wife is so attached to the husband that he didn't come home at that time, and then that those moments that they could be together are lost, so therefore she becomes anger after frustration. But it's based on attachment or affection. So if that's understood, then the husband is more careful, and rather than blowing up, you never give me space, I'm worrying for you and this and that, and why do you always have to this and that, I come home a long day and this is all I'm getting, like this. So you go on. So then he could think, yeah, the attachment's there and all that, I should be considerate. So next time I should make sure I call.
It's flattered.
Yeah. So if you look at it in the right way, it's personal, it deepens it, it makes it work. But the modern paradigm is the opposite. Hey, give me space, give me this and that. What's wrong if I go down and dance at the disco with all the half-naked girls and all that? I'm just dancing. It doesn't mean anything. Like that. You know, so it's just... It's very cute that the Westerners try their best to get away with this. It's even more cute when devotees try to get away with it. Does that make some sense? So... what point are we trying to get to?
We're trying to get from the position.
Yeah, no, but there was some other point there. Oh, yeah. So then, we're on forgiveness. So if you look at it that way, then you could also transfer that to this devotee is dealing with me in this way and that way, and it's rough and this and that. But you could look at it, but actually, they're just trying to serve Krishna. And somehow or another, according to whatever situations they've grown up in, they don't see anything wrong with the way they're dealing. It may not be correct, but they're actually trying to serve Prabhupada. The methods may could use some improvement, this, that. So what I'm saying is the same principle can be brought across. Is that a, that for, then it goes on. Then there's no... glitch, or say, what are those things called?
Breach?
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm thinking of one is in iron, and there's the stuff up in the slag, and those when they become chunks. You know, there's a name for them. They don't have all these baggage just left over that gets in the way of the relationship. So forgiveness is there, things go on. If there's no forgiveness, then it doesn't go on. So it's just, if that's the mentality, then it works. But that mentality is actually technically a human mentality. It's not an animal mentality. It's a human mentality. Because that means in knowledge you've seen it and you let it go. Dogs don't notice how gross they are. They're oblivious. They're just like that. So they don't mind. But they don't notice how rough they are. Is that, they're all rough, you know. But human means you can see it with knowledge and be able to accommodate it. You know, that doesn't mean you put it away. It means you actually deal with it. You know.
When Lord Krishna said that you have to work your prescribed duties, so if we are trying to avoid knowing what varna I am. Actually, I don't even perform it. My duties properly in the service of Krishna.
Yeah. Now, if you want to avoid knowing what one wants, it's hard to do the duty. It's very important, though, as devotees, there'll be inherent areas in which we will naturally be comfortable to act. That's the conditioned nature. So you could label the particular conditioned nature. But more important than labeling the conditioned nature is identifying what we are doing now. This is a very subtle point also why it's very hard to apply the Varnashram within the devotional culture. Because you have to look at both. There's, as a devotee, then you have some things. As a conditioned nature, that has something. Then you have whatever situations actually available. Because Varnashram is meant to be applied whether things are perfect or not perfect. And so if they're not perfect, then you have to figure out what it is. Just let us just say, you have someone who's a Brahmin, but they're having to act as a Vaishya. Okay. That's given in Manasamhita. The details are given. So now, it's not ideal, but that's what he has to do. But now, that means, as far as the culture goes, he's still acting as a Brahmin, but as far as his occupation, he has to act as a Vaishya. Right? Therefore, because he's making his money as a Vaishya, as a businessman, he can't come in and advise the king. He wants to step back, and then from the angle of being a Brahmin and present himself that way, then he can. A Brahmin who knows business. So that's what I'm saying, is whatever is the situation now, one has to take that. It's like one may have been the head pujari before or been the big preacher, but now you're a business person who lives outside the temple. You can say, when I was the head pujari, we did like this and this. It can't be, well, when I was the head pujari, we did like this, and now you're changing everything. It's like, of course, it's their right to change it. Who are you, Jack? Get out of here. You're a businessman. Beat it. You know? Shut up. You know what I'm saying? It's like, what's your right to speak? So why don't the temple council tell you how you're going to spend your money? And let's see what you say. You know, so they have that, you know, it's your right to make comments on them as much as it's their right to tell you what to do. So it's just like, you know, back off. You're a businessman, you live outside. Keep your mouth shut. You know, but they're temple people, they're the business to keep their mouth shut. They can't tell you how to run your business, how to spend your money, or who you want to give it to. It's not their right. You want to give your money to another zone? It's your business. It's none of their business. They would give it to you if they somehow or another were impressed by you. You say, well, we cultivate them and we do everything. Then why aren't they giving their money to you? That means you, in your own mind, are cultivating, but you haven't caught their heart. Otherwise, why aren't they giving you the money? So therefore, what's your right to say this thing? Charity is a personal sadhana. It's not your business to tell them what to do. I mean, I can't say, well, you have to sit in your living room, you know, facing east and chant your japa. It's your house. You do what you like and chant where you like. I can't tell you. I can say you should chant japa. But even that's advice. Oh, if you want to be part of the temple management, then if you don't chant 16 rounds in that, then we're not interested. We can say that, you know. So we have to know where the limit is. That's the whole point. So, therefore, what you are now is what you deal with. What you are now is what you deal with. So, if you're acting as a businessman, then you have to, on the occupational platform, deal as a business person. Devotional, then it's spiritual. You're devotees. Then there's no like that. You can speak on spiritual topics. You can lead the kirtan, give the class, do the puja. That's no problem. But when it comes to economics and administration, education and that, then you're a businessman. You keep within your sphere. You may have some great idea that you want to present to the management, but it has to be done helpfully, pleasantly, not because you're the big devotee that was the temple president before and now are not doing your own thing. It's like, okay, you have some, you see some, and what you're saying is right. But still, you can only advise, and pleasantly. Everything has its own potency. So that's my point, is you don't tell the temple what to do, but the temple can't tell you what to do. It goes both ways. It's just like the Brahmin can tell the Kshatriyas what to do, but they don't get the credit. If the Kshatriya follows what the Brahmins did, he gets the credit, not the Brahmins. Brahmins can't say, yeah, we told him that. No. He's got to say, yes, you know, it was all successful and nice. I thank everybody for appreciating that, but it's all that because of the advice I'm taking from these devotees. And even that, it may be private. It doesn't have to be public. He may not, but I wouldn't do it too much. Otherwise, people will then again think he's not special. Right, you know, because faith and authority is very weak in the common person. Like that. It's natural to be there, but at the same time, it tends to be weak. Does this make sense? You had something? Oh, you did? Okay.
This class is about doing something that I was doing earlier, so you've answered a lot of it in the place. If you notice something subtly, and you try to explain to someone and feeling their behavior, one incident where behavior is slightly disrespectful or not considerate, place where you take it out on just in the most simple way. And because they're not seeing it on a subtle, they're related to the growth, so they're defending themselves and then verbally attacking you. And then you point it out the second time, if you with awareness about it, then you see the next day that's still disregarding that you ask them just to be respectful of the situation. And then they're really going on for one. Is it best to just walk away and accept, okay, they can't understand? If it's in like neutral ground, like for example, should we go somewhere to stand in the way? You know, I'm saying you go to trouble. And they're not accepting that one behavior is not as respectful as I'm feeling as disrespectful to the managers, and they're thinking that that's okay to do so. So because even though I, like you say, the role of management, I'm not quite the role of management, but I've taken on the, in a non-appointed way of looking after the area.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have any jurisdiction to tell the other jurors how to do this or that. So I said something twice, so now should I just walk away, not walk away, but just think, okay, Krishna, since person is Krishna, you see Krishna, so then you'll be less attached. Because it doesn't directly affect my service, but I'm aware that, you know, I could, you know, you feel that something is not right.
Mm-hmm.
So, because you can't make someone else see.
Yeah, and his point is that teaching. So, one is, you said something, they don't care. So then, we want it to be more respect. But then one can, because we're looking at here, application and knowledge. So application also includes the sentiments, everything, and the knowledge is knowledge. You know, it's the facts of the elements. So, one, you could also look at it, means, how you say, we're going to give a caveat here. The answers that I always give are for you. They're not what the others are supposed to do. Like that. Means the answer is going to be what you should do about it yourself, that you can solve the problem, that you're not bothered by it, even though it doesn't actually physically solve the problem, because that includes them. So if that's understood, then our answers make sense. One, you could look at it, why do they have to respect you in the first place? Just because you said it, why does it matter? Everyone's got a mouth, so everyone can talk, but why is it specifically they have to listen to what comes out of your mouth? You know what I'm saying? We're saying these are being said as contemplations for you, how you can think about these things. We're not saying this at you or to you or, you know, as some people like. We're saying this is how you could perceive it. Two, how you said it, then they didn't understand. So is the responsibility for the understanding yours or theirs? Just like if you're taking here, you have something, you're making a point. Is it as a senior? Is it as an equal? Is it as a junior? You know, what is the position? So if it's senior, then it's your business to make them understand. They don't understand, it's your fault. You didn't find the right way or moment or words or mood to get it across. If it's equals, then you've done your, you know, you should find as much as you can the way to get it to work. But still, then 50%, they gotta go. And if you're junior, simply you have to find a nice way that it was actually heard and understood what you said, but whether they act on it or that, or what they want to do with it after that, that's their business because they're senior. Right? That's one. Then the other side is, well, what is the reason that they're doing what they're doing? You know? And after hearing them explain it from their perspective, don't lay your perspective onto it while they're explaining it. Because you want to hear what is their perspective, then afterwards you can compare it to your perspective. So in their mind, they may be doing something they think is very proper. You know, just like you have the water from the conch shell, from the arti, they come up from behind you without you even knowing, you know, and sprinkle it on the back of your head. Works over here if it's warm, but you know, when it's cold, it's a bit of a shock. Where did that come from? It's not Vedic, there's no tradition like that. It just started because some leading man hated, because he stands in the front and he wears glasses, he hated every time they threw the water to have to wipe his glasses off, so he said throw it from behind. That's how it started. You know, and practically most temples you go to in the movement, it's pretty popular. And it simply started because of somebody's trying to deal with the situation on the material platform. It's got nothing to do with actual reality of what's correct. Right? So sometimes they actually think they're doing some nice service. You know, they in their own mind actually think this is nice. So you can find out, and then if it's one of those things you can't do much about, then you can appreciate that actually they aren't being disrespectful. It's just their own unique way of, you know, it's just like you had 26 Second Avenue, you had this drunk barge into the assembly of the devotees, and probably is giving class with a roll of toilet paper, you know, and goes into the bathroom, because he probably found a roll of toilet paper and thought, well, you know, give this to the Hare Krishnas, they're okay folks. And then like that, and Prabhupada's thought, nice, and then he walked out. But he's a bum, so therefore, you know, you don't go, you know, can't see where the class is going on and this, that. Here's the pure devotee, Nitya Siddha, you know, like that, and you're doing this and that and all that. And these are devotees, you know, the residents of the spiritual world, Siddha with four arms. Yeah, I mean, you can go on and on and on like that. But the point is Prabhupada understood where the guy's coming from, and he made his endeavor and appreciated it, and he got the benefit. So that's broad-minded. Does that make sense? So these approaches, if you're talking about technical skill, then you can explain what you're saying is that this is how you understand it technically, and rather than it's right or wrong or I said so, why not that it bothers you? No, that it does bother you. You know what I'm saying? Rather than hide the emotions because of prestige, and then come in and, you know, as the authority, it's a matter of you do this and that, and somehow or another, you know, I feel bad because I perceive that, you know, you're disrespecting the others. You know, so then the intelligence has been taken care of, the mind has been taken care of. You know what I'm saying? Rather than it's right or wrong and I'm telling you so and why don't you understand, it's a matter of, you know, this is, you know, what I'm understanding for what you're doing, and it bothers me in this way. Can you explain? And then when they explain, then it may be a completely different thing that you need to adjust the way you're looking at it. Or then they'll adjust because if they know it bothers you, it might get farther than because you told them so.
And then when you explain, and then they make the point of being more good on another point about.
So that means is that you're dealing on issues here, so you just leave it. Point is it's like this, is the neophyte thinks his guru is special, and he's the only one. And it's a neophyte disease. And why is that? Because the neophyte thinks the neophyte himself is special. Anything connected with his neophyteness is special. And so his guru happens to be connected with himself. So that's actually why his guru is special. It's not because otherwise, then if he could actually see that, means if he's actually really appreciating the qualities of the guru, he might see that those qualities are in others also. But if he can't see that, then that means is actually he's just seeing his own qualities reflected into the guru of what he likes. You know? You know, I'm bold, and Guru, he's bold, and I like that. But he's just seeing himself, which is fine. Because the point is that's Rupa Goswami says, Swajati, you find those persons that have a like nature, because then you can relate to them, you're willing to hear Krishna consciousness, you trust them, you're willing to be involved with them. So it's fine. But it does have this weakness that then the neophyte thinks that his perspective, you know, and his guru and his everything, that's the cat's meow, and everybody else somehow or another, you know, they weren't so fortunate, made a mistake. I've actually heard those words come out of a devotee's mouth.
you know, walked right in, never saw the guy before in their life, just walked in and said, oh, you know, it's really fortunate, you know, that today, you know, you weren't able to take initiation from our Guru Maharaj, but he's here now and you can hear from him and that way then perfect your life. I've heard these exact words come out of a disciple's mouth to other disciples. He's out, you know, spreading the good word. Like that. So, that's the problem. If you look at all the guru politics, it's not the guru that's the problem, it's generally the disciples. Now and again you get, you know, about that, but in general, the big, big ones are all because of disciples. Because they can't tolerate anything that anyone else does that is an insult to their guru. You know, so you have to be very, very careful of that, you know, because the samadhis have their own little places. You just, that area, you do your thing over there. Who do you all, you know, what they want to do? They want to stand on their head in front of the Guru Maharaj, or, you know, while the offering's going on, shout and scream, you know, the Guru Maharaj's ki jai, and do dandavats while you're trying to make the offering, and doing pujas, you know, hey, you know. Point is your Guru Maharaj will hear what you say, even though you can't. You know, so it's like that. It's just, don't worry about it. Or if it's too much of a problem, do your puja at a different time. If they're there at 6, come at 5:30, or come at 6:30. Or, you know, just be there at another time. You know. That makes sense.
And if I said, I mean, I wasn't disrespectful to that, but
no, because they know they're not body. Because the point is, the 769, it's like this. If we're going to deal on things of etiquette, then at the same time, we have to remember all the things of seniority. Age is one of them.
So what I'm saying is, should I give this, even though I just accept it, they're not understanding why I'm having the standards and they're taking the standards. So just don't even discuss the issue of readiness, but just set it on my, for my self-consciousness so that I don't have any issues dealt with. If I give some prashad and then there's something else some prashad, not even say too much because I'm feeling if I say too much, they'll think the Lord.
Yeah, just you find what works. You find what works. Yeah, you find what works. That's what's important. You find what works. You know what I'm saying? It means you have to be smart and get done. It means women are 4 times more clever, so use that cleverness to advantage than to disadvantage. You know? And if it means more service for you, you know, they make more of a mess, then, you know, then you get to clean up behind Maharaj's samadhi and you get the benefit. You know? Like that. Okay, last point. How do you think natural chastity?
Yeah, how to attain.
How to attain natural? The question is, how do you, in this age, how do you attain chastity? Meaning, because we mentioned that means that the principles of chastity, self-control, satisfaction, and sensitivity are the 4 qualities that, you know, the austerities that the grahasta has to endeavor for. Any quality that's not there inherently, either from previous life or from association you've gained in this life, you can get through intellect, through the intelligence, through knowledge and practice. So if intellectually you see it's there, analyze it, the mind's accepted intellectually it's good, but you don't have, then you practice it. And then it comes. Does that make sense? Because the most external form of it can see is, okay, physically one is not intimately involved with a man other than one's own husband. You know, that's basically bottom line, everybody will agree to that. Like that. Well, yeah. Or at least without the approval of the husband. Right? Eskimos have their own polity. But at the same time, we see Gandhari as an example. She never even thought of, or well, definitely she can't look, but thought of or talked about any other men. So it's another level. It's just not an interest. So that kind of things, then intellectually we work on and then try to get to there. So we see what are the practices, how to work on it, how to improve it. So it's just a matter of practice. That's why sadhana bhakti is there. So we don't have bhakti, so through practice, through knowledge and practice, we can get it. Does that make sense? You know, in the authorized way. So in the same way as then any quality that we feel we lack, or let's say, yeah, or needs to be enhanced, is covered by an impurity, then through knowledge and practice, then we can improve the situation. So no situation is ever like finished or lost. It's just a matter of first coming with intelligence and understanding, and then clearing what's there, and then... Does that make sense? Like that. So then it can work. It's not a... It's you know, like that. Okay? There's something on that? Yeah.
About the nearsightedness thing, I've noticed in our midst the Vaishnava community are very prominent. Priding ourselves to be the best religion, mm-hmm. Of course, because we are. So, even though that is a typical neophyte understanding, that mm-hmm. religion is the best, mm-hmm. Simply because that's what all religious neophytes in the world think.
Mm-hmm.
Their religion is the best.
Mm-hmm.
So when I point this out, typically to devotees, that we've got to be careful about this tendency, the answer I get is, but in our case, it's true.
It is true. It means in our case, it is the best, because it's recommended by God Himself. But at the same time, there's the element that if it is the best, still means you have to find ways to get others to appreciate it. And it's not just because we said so. God said it's the best, not because we said it's the best. So then, how to get others to understand that? Just because we said that others have to listen? No, that's the whole point, is we have to find what way will make them listen, you know?
Make them see them.
Yeah, so generally because most others are working on the platform of pranamoy, it's extended sense gratification. So that basically means that, how do you say?
Because it's my religion, therefore it's...
Yeah, but it's also, how do you say? Their bottom line is basically be good, be nice. So then if they can see that the devotees are nice, that would probably be a first step for many of them appreciating. But this be nice doesn't mean being modern or Western nice, it means being Vedic nice like Prabhupada was. You know? It's a real concern, it's not a superficial concern. You can start with the superficial concern and all the crocodile grins and all that. You can, but with time it should move into actual substance with practice. You know? So they're following, so it's good. They're following some restrictions and this and that, so it's good. You know, before they sit down and eat their meat, they are saying some prayer. So there's some restrictions. That's better than the people who don't do that. So anyone who's following any kind of social restriction is better than one who doesn't. You know, these people in public will dress in a more, you know, let's say what you classify by those who have a more traditional conservative outlook as respectable. That's they're better than those who don't. Right? Because there's reasons for those restrictions. So they are better in that way. But at the same time, that's because it's coming from Scripture. And that they've chosen it, then they get the credit for that. But it's not because they're doing it. It's not because they're dressing appropriately. That's why it's good. No. It's because the Scriptures say. Like that. You know, so that's... that's where we can be bold but at the same time accommodating, because it's not us. You know, we're either not bold and not accommodating, or we are materially accommodating and these things, because it's us. Oh, I don't want to look bad, so therefore, you know, don't say anything, give them space. No, it's a matter of, you know, if it's not important, don't talk about it. Why are you talking? The commonalities are there. Why are you talking about the differences in the religion? What's the common one? Developing love for God, okay, that's a common thing. So many religions have that, some don't. Well, the ones that don't have that, then, you know, material world is an illusion and getting out of it and all that, that's common. Right? So the path of devotion or karma is common with, you know, one category, and the process of liberation is common with another category. So we always have something in common. And in any case, elevation of the human spirit to something of a more idyllic platform, all religions will accept. So there's always some place where you can start. So that's the point. That's what makes our religion superior.
Rather than
it's not that, you know, we shave our heads, they don't. You know, we wear bed sheets, they don't. A lot of them, actually most of them wear bed sheets. So it's we don't have anyone there. So you know, so you know, sorry.
Yeah. So is there a point when talking to such other religionists, other people to insist as much as we can to?
No, the point is it's principles. The principle is worship of God, surrender to God, make sacrifice for God. You know, these are the things that that's the point. The detail of us, that'll come anyway. If the purified person will appreciate it. We do, there are priests in the world, ordained practicing priests who do read our books. You know, and they work our philosophy and stuff into their seminars. I don't talk about, I'm talking about devotees who've taken jobs as priests. I know one devotee like that. He needed a job, and he saw, I think, an opening for an Anglican priest or something. So you don't have to be an Anglican to do it. So, you know, he goes and does, you know, I think marriages and funerals and stuff. And he's quite popular, you know, like that. But he's a devotee, you know, but I don't think, because you don't have to be ordained, I think, to be there, to do their rituals. So that's his job, you know, he gets paid for it. You know, so it's, I don't mean that, I mean people who are, you know, grew up, went to their monasteries and this and that, became ordained priests and that, and they study our books. So it's okay.
Because I deal with groups like that a lot when I go to preach in the West, other religions, other yoga groups. But I try, personally, I say that I'm not there yet, personally. I see this as the highest goal. I'm not there yet.
Yeah, no, that's
make them feel that I am superior.
Yeah, that's right. No, the point is God's superior, and the process of God realization is superior. And so, those who don't follow, that's unfortunate. But the souls are superior to dead matter. So therefore, no soul is beyond redemption, and no soul is beyond some way trying to find a way to help them. Because that's what Brahmins do. That's what, you know, religionists do. They try to benefit others. It's their welfare works. It's their charity. So that's common, and if that is accepted, then it's not a bad thing. You have to take it back from where they fight over. It's not that within the religion, I don't think there's a religion that they're not killing each other within the religion. Christians, they kill each other. I mean, actually. The wars, I mean, so many of the wars were just religious wars between Protestants and Catholics. Or within Catholicism, I think there's over 200 branches of Catholicism, and there so many of them then burnt at the stake and stuff like that. And then probably within that, then there's so many, you know. So it's they don't, and each one thinks that all the other Christians other than their particular group are going to hell. It's not even that, you know, they won't get as good as I get, you know, like that. No, they're all going to hell.
Because they're betrayed.
Yeah, and that, and then that's, you know, off of what we know of, is that there's Catholicism and Protestant. That, that's, Protestant is a branch off of Catholicism. Catholicism, I think, is one of five or six different branches of Christianity that goes back 2,000 years. You know, you have the Egyptian branch, you have the, you know, the East Orthodox, you know, right? You have all these ones that are completely separate systems. You know, and it's not that they opposed the Pope and left. It was just, they just developed. Like, they were just Christians in different areas, and they just developed. At some point, maybe they clashed, and then they made their... before that, we were all Christian, and after that, it's kind of, okay, you are that Christian, I'm this Christian.
Romans imposed
it. Yeah, Romans, so many people like that, yeah. But I'm just saying it would come up at that time. So these kind of things are there. So within it, the Buddhists, they have their sects, you know, the everybody has, you know. And so, let alone between the religions, even within. So it's being able to appreciate where the other person kind of, what's their purpose. In other words, what is the purpose of your religion? What do you want to do? You know, you want to develop that level. What is it? What is your method? You know, so there is something there, some form. And so then that has its potency. You know, austerity has potency. You know, that's why you had these Christian priests say that, you know, whip themselves or sit in caves or, you know, wear nothing or wear furs inside out. You know, so the potency comes from that. And many times even realization of it, because they're, what they're trying to get to is not much, they'll realize that, but not beyond. Because their specific system isn't the methods authorized for getting the highest realizations. Understand? Like that. Okay, so I think we'll end here.
Thank you. Hello, Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Jai Gaur.
Thank you.